You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I think, yeah, we're live. We're doing it.
Yo.
Breakdown. We're in it. This is the official first episode that Mikey is absent, as you can see. He's gallivanting in Charlotte with the Bridgeport Islanders with like a group of 80 or 90 people doing the damn thing. So I don't know how this is going to go. This could get really weird. Essentially, they've given me a live mic to talk to two guys that are from Montreal, and if Mikey thinks that he's not going to hear me talk for 10 to 15 minutes about the Montreal Screwjob and Bret Hart, then he's wrong. Positively am. But, dude, we're here with our homie Sucker Punch, again, from Montreal, Quebec, apparently is the way you're supposed to say it, not Quebec like stupid Americans do. But we're here with Sucker Punch. We got Jonathan and Terry chilling with us. We got Jonathan who slapped at a bass, and then we've got Terry who plays some guitar. Boys, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you being here with us. What's going on?
Well, first off, thanks for inviting us. It's pretty sick.
Yeah. This is a super cool thing. Bear with me if my dog barks a bunch. That's just what she loves to do. But yeah, I'm really pumped that you guys are here. You know, it's not often that we get to chat with bands from like specifically like Quebec as a province. I think we've only had maybe like one or two on before, so it's kind of cool. Just out of curiosity, do either of you guys speak French at all?
We both speak French. Yeah,
we do. Awesome. I wish I did, but I feel like that's. You know, kind of a staple, and you know, forgive me, I've never been north of the border yet, sadly. You know, if there's one thing I know, you know, with Canada in general, it seems like Montreal is just one of those places where I feel like it's almost a prerequisite to be bilingual. Would you guys kind of say that that's the case?
Yeah, I would say definitely. It's like the province is I would say majoritarily French. Mm-hmm. But Montreal is kind of this crazy hybrid city where it's 50-50, English, French. The rest of Canada, mostly English, little pockets of French here and there. So we kind of have, we're kind of like unique in North America that we're a fully bilingual city. Yeah. And it's very interesting. We call it franglais, which means like French and English mixed together. So we kind of mix the two languages and go back and forth, use the slang from all of it. So we have like our little language here.
Awesome. That's super cool. I think, you know, like I said, it is probably one of the, you know, as far as like, you know, North America is concerned, you know, the US and Canada, it's very, very unique. I think that's really, really cool. So I guess before we kind of dive into talking a little bit of Sucker Punch and, you know, the couple of singles that you guys have out and, you know, the genesis of the band, I would just kind of love to hear, you know, from two Montreal boys about what, like, you know, the pop punk ethos is in Montreal. Like, I'd just kind of love to hear about, you know, where you guys are going to shows, how, you know, the scene is developed. And I guess, you know, maybe we'll start with Jonathan. Like, what are your first memories of kind of getting into alternative or pop punk and, you know, in the area? And, you know, what would you say that it, you know, it's like?
Well, there's a place called Les Foufounes Électriques down Montreal and St. Catherine. It's a big, well, it's an old school bar that used to have a lot of pop punk, hardcore punk rock bands that plays not necessarily local, but mostly kind of, how would you say, semi-ish big bands that used to play there.
Yeah, it's really known for like big bands playing their first concert in the city there. Like Nirvana played there.
Yeah, true.
Oh, wow. Before they blew up.
So I used to go there when I turned 18. Legal age to drink here is 18 to go to bars. So started to go there maybe almost once a week. So that's my first memory watching pop punk bands going live. It was very, very fun.
That's awesome. Now what as far as tours are concerned, you know, I know, you know, you kind of are part of that East Coast loop, or at least you can be. You know, I know it's a lot easier when we talk to a bunch of Canadian bands. I know it's a lot easier, you know, to travel into Canada from the U.S. than the opposite direction. You know, we've got our buddies in this great band called The Crease Rule, who are from Ontario, who are actually joining a bunch of bands en route down to this festival that we're doing called the Bar Down Breakfest. They just kind of gave us the lay of the land on all of the nonsense it took for them to get their visas, and we had to write up contracts and all this stuff. And it was just like a crazy headache. And, you know, it kind of makes me feel bad for bands that especially are kind of just starting out, or, you know, don't really have the money to apply for visas, and they just, you know, can't get into the States. And that's kind of a bummer. So, I mean, you know, do you find that as far as, you know, American tours are concerned, do you find that a lot of them stop in Montreal, or for the most part, or some of them kind of skip in those areas just for the fact of not being able to route it appropriately or having issues getting there?
I think Montreal used to be like a hotbed. I mean, like we used to have Warped Tour up until maybe 2 years before they stopped it. They just took the Montreal date away.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know, from there, it's been a bit tougher to get, you know, we get skipped over quite a bit. So, you know, as Montrealers who are obviously big music fans, it's either you drive down to New York, to go check out the show, or, you know, often it'll be in Toronto. Toronto's a pretty big, city and gets most of the tours. But like in the last couple of months, there's been quite a few cool shows in Montreal. Like Kenny Oopla just came.
Nice.
It's gonna be Stand Atlantic that's coming soon. Our girl Avril just came to Montreal.
Sweet.
You know, with this like new punk and stuff, it's gonna hit Montreal as hard as it's hitting you guys in the States, and we're gonna start getting some of those dope concerts. Because, you know, in the 2010s to 2020 era of pop punk, that's a great era of pop punk, but less popular, less mainstream. We were getting a bit less of the concerts, and we had to make road trips. I mean, road trips are fun, but it's cool to go home and sleep in your bed also after the show.
Oh, for sure. And you know, that's another tough thing. And I mean, it's a small microcosm, but you know, I've been in Orlando, Florida. You know, I grew up in New York, from Long Island, and you know, that was never a problem because, you know, every tour that you'd ever want to see, even if they didn't come onto the island, you know, they would be either in Brooklyn or Manhattan, you know. But Florida is one of those funky things, right? Where a lot of tours, because the whole idea of Florida, unless you're doing geographically like the Florida panhandle, you know, you got to go south and then you got to come back north. Like you have no option. So Orlando being in central Florida, you know, there are a lot of tours that are gracious enough to come because Orlando is a big market, as is, you know, Fort Lauderdale and Miami, which is even further south. But the troubling thing with that is, you know, if you go, you know, let's say, you know, if you're routing a tour, let's say you're going north to south, right? It's much easier to say, okay, well, we're going to stop in Jacksonville and then we're going to go to, Pensacola, and then you can just drive right into, you know, Alabama and Louisiana from there. Whereas if you go to Orlando, you know, you're going, you know, 2 hours south, and then Miami is another three and a half. So it's almost like you got to build the time in to get in and get back out. So, you know, geographically that's an issue, but you know, I think that the cool thing about Montreal is, you know, it's a, from what I understand, it's an old city, right? And there's so much history there. And I feel like it's just such a cool place for bands to go if they haven't had the opportunity, just because there's so much going on there. And then of course, you know, you've got, you know, the Habs that are, you know, essentially like a Canadian. Yeah, exactly. They're like a Canadian, you know, like institution, you know? So, I mean, like, it's like if you, you know, you go there, and even if you're not a hockey fan, if you're, you know, gracious enough to somehow, you know, get tickets to get into the Bell Center, it is, right?
Which
from what I've heard is like, apparently it's like getting tickets or getting season tickets is like the equivalent of like being a Dallas Cowboy fan, you know, in American football in the NFL and trying to get season tickets. It's almost impossible. I heard it's grandfathered down, right? That's kind of,
there's a waiting list. There's a waiting list, and you have to pay to be on the waiting list.
Oh, that's insane.
So you're paying $200 a year to wait and except for get this nothing year. In return.
Except that's for incredible. This year, people were almost giving their tickets to a
– I believe that.
Yeah, today's a good – this year is a good year to move up in the waiting list.
Yeah. But, that's something that I think a lot of NHL teams go through is the whole idea of you know, the fickle fan base. But, I mean, I feel like – when you look at the Canadians and you look at the Leafs and like, you know, teams like that, but again, have, you know, the, you know, essentially their original six. And I mean, the Canadians, I mean, far beyond that, you know, we're around in the tens or, you know, whenever before the NHL actually existed, you know, there are probably generations of people who have been Habs fans and Leafs fans. And, you know, it's a lot different than, you know, kind of what's going on with some of these newer teams. And far be it from me to, you know, to jump on Preds fans or Knights fans or anything like that, because those cities are raucous when it comes to, you know, having hockey, which is a great thing. But I mean, just like I said, the institutionalized feeling of hockey up there, it's just so much different. So I guess if you could just share a little bit about that too, just because we're on the topic, you know, being Canadiens fans, being from Montreal, like what hockey is, because I think in America, you know, still hockey is viewed as like the counterculture sport, you know, which is, you know, the quote unquote, the fourth sport. Right. But in Canada, you know, even when you get into the Western provinces, it's like the biggest deal, but I can't imagine what it must be like in Montreal. So what's the vibe there? You know, of course, knowing that I think you guys had the Expos up until, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, but I mean, you know, geez, you know, the Habs got to be the premier thing there, right?
The Habs are a legit religion in Montreal.
Yeah.
You're born into it, and you pass it on from generation to generation. And it is a religion, and that makes expectations sky high through the roof. That's why it is. When you're winning, it's the best market to be in. When you're losing, it's probably for the players, the one of the worst markets to be in.
Sure.
Expectations are so high. You know, you keep hearing about Guy Lafleur and Maurice Richard and all the great teams that have just won, you know, everything all the time. And that's kind of the expectation that you're at now. And culturally, the Habs are a big deal also. You know, it was seeing, you know, French Canadian players be basically rock stars in your hometown. That just, you know, empowered the French Canadian people.
Yeah.
So it goes way beyond just hockey. And you said it, it's the only show in town also. I mean, obviously, a lot of people are football fans and NBA fans, and we do have an MLS team, but it's just like the religion is hockey, and that's the only thing that people talk about. I mean, last year when we went all the way to the Stanley Cup finals, it was literally the only thing that people were talking about. and people were just going to work and like bolting. Well, actually, people were working from home, but whatever. People were bolting from their office to their couch and just watching the pregame show and just waiting for all these games. It was just so exciting. And it was, you know, even though we weren't outside and experiencing it with all these people, you could feel the energy in the city. It's pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, it was a topic everywhere, man. Like between your friends, at home, family, work, even going to the grocery store, you were talking hockey with the cashier. So it was crazy last year.
I love that. I mean, you know, and that's something that, you know, a lot of markets in America lack, unfortunately. You know, I can say it, you know, very clearly down here. You know, the closest team to where I am in Central Florida, of course, are the Bolts, and you know they had a hell of a series against the Leafs, and I think for me, one of the most anticipated series coming up in the semis is going to be the Cats and the Bolts. I think that's going to blow everybody away. Also, though, you know, the quote unquote, I guess, Battle of Alberta, as they're calling it. You know, the Oilers versus the Flames on the other side, I think is going to be really, really great to see. But, you know, when you're, you know, out and about in Florida, you know, Florida is more than anything, it's college football country, right? And I mean, it couldn't be any starkly different from, you know, what you're experiencing in, you know, up north in Montreal. And even, you know, like when I was on, you know, on Long Island in New York, you know, Long Island has a very, very rich culture and an attachment to the Islanders. And, you know, obviously they went on that run in the 80s, which was, you know, a dominant run, and they had some of the, you know, the best players on the ice at the time. But even at that, you know, it's a house divided. It's, you know, Islander fans and Ranger fans. And, you know, I would think that, you know, living in Montreal, you know, if you saw someone in a Leaf sweater, it would be like sacrilege. You know, it's just like, what the hell is going on? But in Florida,
There's a bunch of fucking assholes who live in Montreal and are all about the, how can I say it, going against the grain and being either a fucking Boston fan. There's so many people who are like, Boston, yeah, yeah, or a Leafs fan. And like, they rub it in your face and they just want to cause shit. And it's fine. It's all fun and games, but it's there is that part of the population which is really funny.
And I mean, and they got nothing to rub this season. You know, both the Bruins and the Leafs had an acrimonious exit, you know, and
they played seven games more than the Habs.
that's true, and seven games more than the Islanders too. But and you know, we'll kind of touch upon it, because I definitely want to talk playoff hockey, because it really is the best time of the year. And the fact that so many series went seven in the first round alone was, I think, just an awesome, awesome thing for hockey. But I want to talk Sucker Punch for a little bit. So, you know, from what I'm seeing, you know, I grabbed you guys on Spotify, listened to the two singles you have up. So I guess just walk me through it as far as content is concerned. So the two singles that you have up, are you kind of sitting on a collection of songs? Do you have something that is due to get released, or are you guys kind of going like the single route where you're just going to drop some singles every month or so in anticipation of something bigger? Kind of what's on the horizon for you guys?
So right now we're huge algorithm sluts.
Yeah. Okay.
Meaning that we are going that route of dropping the singles every 2-3 months. We're sitting on, we did a first recording session. It was about four songs that, you know, we've been slowly dripping through the internet, and that's the plan, you know, release those songs, get the anticipation for the next song going. Build up the fan base. I mean, we're brand spanking new. Like you said, we have two singles out. The first one came out in February. But we're always thinking ahead. We're always looking forward. And we're actually in 2 weeks going to Toronto to go record another four songs. So
awesome.
Very stoked. I've been writing quite a bit right now. So I've been missing some playoff games, unfortunately, but you know, we're just really excited. I mean, we kind of came out of nowhere, and the reception's been really, really good. Everybody seems to be really enjoying the songs and really spinning them like crazy. Like we just look at at the number of playlists that we're on, AKA how many people are adding our songs to the playlist by artist. And it's literally insane. I don't understand what's happening, but
I was just going to say, you guys, I saw that you guys got added to, a couple of playlists. I saw that like you were on one that I think, had been curated by you guys, but I saw that you were on a bunch of like the kind of, up and coming pop punk playlists, which I think, is such an enormous thing these days, you know? So, I mean, my age shows whenever I talk about this kind of stuff, because I'm in my mid 30s, and back in the day, you know, the thing that really caught people's attention is if you made it onto a comp, right? So like, you know, you would, I don't know, like the Warped Tour comp, like just to put that into perspective, right? So, I mean, everybody, you walked into Warped Tour, you got your free bag from, you know, Epitaph or whatever that had a million stickers in it. I remember still having like a Turbo Negro sticker and a, you know, the Hot Water Music sticker that like nobody knew what it was. It was just the flame and the water and the, you know, it's just like, oh, this shit is so cool. But in every bag, you had that like 2002 comp or the 2003 comp. And then you had the Punk-O-Rama comps that Fat Wreck did and all this kind of stuff. And it's so important for those things because they not only gave you an opportunity to listen to bands that were already established, you know, like when I remember getting one of the first, you know, Punk-O-Rama comps and, you know, hearing my first Lagwagon song and hearing my first Millen Collins song and all this stuff that I was like, holy shit, like this exists. Like there are other bands other than The Offspring singing like, Nana, Why Don't You Get a Job that I can listen to, which I thought was like the dopest thing. But here we are like, you know, 20 years later and the same thing is happening, but with these curated playlists. And the whole idea is like, you know, a playlist, you know, a pop punk playlist might throw one of the new State Champ songs on from their new record, right? But you put out a song and all of a sudden, here's your track. And right below it is a State Champ song that has like 5 million plays. Yeah. And it's just like now all of a sudden, someone will put on that State Champ song to listen to it. And, you know, they'll zone out, love that State Champ song. And all of a sudden your song comes on next. And a minute in, they're like, shit, what is this? And then they check it out and they're like, oh, damn. Was a Sucker Punch? This is dope. And then they're on your Spotify. Then they're checking you out. It's such an important thing. And that's kind of what comps were to me. It was like you'd put it in your CD player. You know, you go to like track 4 because you knew that was the one where No Cigar was. And then track 5 was this band Oscar. Never heard of Oscar. Awesome. Next one, Pulley. Who the fuck is Pulley? Awesome. You know, so like you get like this whole idea of just having built in opportunities to hear music you don't. So being on playlists is such a huge thing. So kudos to you guys for getting on there because that is the new wave of making it. Because bands nowadays, you know, the ideology for record labels to get you signed isn't as much like, well, how many records can they sell? You know, how many tours can they jump on? It's how many streams can they get? What's their presence on social media? How many clicks are they getting? And it's just a different business model. But the best thing about it is if you're creative, you can make all that happen yourself and you don't have to struggle like bands did 20 years ago when if you had like a dog shit recording with tinny snare drums and like barely any bass and treble. And, you know, you'd be like, here you go, record label. And they're like, yeah, you know, come see us when you've done, you know, 2 full USs and we'll talk. But now, if you got a great sounding product and enough people are liking you on Instagram, TikTok, and all this stuff, all of a sudden the label sees dollar signs in you because you are producing what you need to do. So it seems like it's kind of on the horizon for you guys as you can kind of take a look. I mean, you guys are getting more monthly listeners and more plays by the day. Was that something that like you guys had any expectation of? Like when you dropped these songs, were you like, damn, these songs are good. Like, I kind of feel like they're gonna pop off, or was it just like, let's, you know, we poured our heart and souls into these and let's just see what happens.
Mr. Joe.
Well, it was, to be honest, it was, we didn't expect that, but it was something we were aiming for. So it was, we were kind of little dreamers just trying to to go back to pop punk during pandemic. So it was, we were hoping for that, but we didn't expect it. But as you said, it's the way to go now. So people are discovering a lot of music that way. So it's very awesome. As you were saying, you're jumping into a state champ song, then you're driving into us. So that's very amazing.
But like you said, man, like the door is wide open. Like that's the thing that's really interesting is getting on the comp previously. Like who did you know to get on that comp? Like now it's the internet. So like, you know, there's DistroKid exists. You can get distributed very easily. That's like a non-issue. Like recording, you don't have to go to a recording studio that's going to cost you $100,000 to make an album that sounds good. People have the technology like on their MacBook now. It's crazy, you know? And these playlists and Spotify by itself, honestly, I mean, a lot of people talk shit about Spotify and they should because, you know, the pay rates are crazy, but some of the other stuff that they do is fucking nuts. Like they see that you listen to State Champs and you listen to Night Calls or our latest single. Well, they're going to find Spotify is going to push Night Calls to somebody who else who listens to State Champs because they're like, oh, there's a chance that they might like this song. So they're kind of pushing your product to other people, and it's beneficial to them because they want to be the hot platform that feeds you your need for new music. But it's good for the artist too because it kind of leaves the door wide open that if you're kind of serious on your end, you're making sure that you're working with the right producers and getting, you know, getting recordings that sound decent. And you're working with the right graphic artists and getting artwork that looks decent, that in the end, there will be ears for you if you put in the work. So that's really encouraging because, I mean, we're not, we don't know anybody in the music industry and we don't, you know, we're not annoying either people in the music industry. We're just being ourselves and that's enough. And I would say in other bands that we've been in, like that just wasn't enough. Like, cause the door wasn't wide open.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's kind of go back in time a little bit. So let's talk about the genesis of Sucker Punch, you know, knowing that you guys are kind of a new entity here. What were you guys doing before? So, I imagine you guys were in other bands and stuff like that. So kind of what led you to start Sucker Punch?
I would say very funnily, MGK. MGK dropped his first pop punk song in 2020.
Which was Bloody Valentine.
Bloody Valentine. So while we were in lockdown, and Joe and I sent it to each other, and we're like, "Look at this fucking guy putting three power chords together and making the simplest song that I feel I could have possibly written a version of." And people are fucking paying attention. I'm like, I think something's happening. Like people are tired of only electronic music. The guitar is going to be cool again. Like we've played in pop punk's band before and we kind of veered a bit from that. Like Joe, you played in a cover band for a few years. Yeah. I played in a fucking pop country band for a couple of years, you know, as like a gun for hire. Okay. And we heard that fucking MGK track and we're like, this is simple and catchy and it's more reminiscent of that like Blink-182 vibes, and like that's kind of like what Joe and I were doing in our previous bands that kind of had like a corny connotation to it for a long time because people were into the Story So Far's of the world and the you know the basements of the world and like the bands that are great, are amazing and have brought so much to the scene, but have a bit more of that like you know, a bit more of a sad sound and, you know, that sad boy pop punk.
Let's yeah, yeah, of course.
The way it, and we were just more party guys, like party pop punk guys. And we saw that there was an opening for that. And it not only did it open in the mainstream with all the Travis Barker core stuff, but like I feel a lot of the bands in the scene themselves, like the new State Champs record is straight up party pop punk. The new Stand Atlantic record is straight up party pop punk. Yep. Even Simple Plan, who veered in like pop rock territory for a really long time, were like, we're making a new album, we're gonna make it fucking pop punk.
Yeah.
So I think we just kind of saw the wave coming. And we also lived life and saw how you know, bands who are maybe a bit more corporate and less like trying to fit in a scene were operating. And we kind of nitpicked a bit of that kind of stuff and like started incorporating the business element into being in a band that maybe we didn't see that much. And it's kind of crazy how much in 2022, you know, doing marketing and posting on social media and finding the right artwork and just trying to catch people's attention is not all about the music. Mm-hmm. So it's being in a band's like a business, and it's obviously it's about the music first, and it's about the art and about like the message and whatever, but like that's something that we just never did in our old bands, that we put a bit more effort into it, and it's just like paying dividends tenfold. It's nuts.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree with you more. I think that you know, music is essentially, you know, artistry first, but in order to make sure that your art is displayed appropriately, is broadcast appropriately, gets to as many ears as possible, is to have a good business acumen. You just have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know, and back in the day, you know, that's what managers and publicists and all this stuff was for. I mean, like, you know, do I really think that, you know, Kurt, Chris, and Dave, like, really gave a shit about, like, any of that kind of stuff when they were putting out Bleach and, you know, all those records in the early 90s? Like, was Nirvana? Probably not. But, like, somebody realized that, like, hey, this is cutting edge, and, you know, I can make you guys a bunch of money. And they were probably like, okay, yeah, that's kind of cool. But realistically, it was probably like, hey, Kurt, like, you know, I can get your bleeding heart and soul out to this many people that will hear your art. And, you know, maybe some will appreciate it. You know, some will, you know, will call it a passing fad. But at the end of the day, you have to have that ability to be able to promote yourselves. And I think that's something that the internet in general has made easier for a lot of people, because you don't have to, like we discussed earlier, you know, when it came to getting on a comp and say, you got to know somebody, you got to know this guy, you got to know that. You don't really need to. You just have to have a good understanding of the algorithms that each social media, you know, platform has, how to navigate them, and how to display your content to audiences. And if you could do that, again, you're right, it is less about the music sometimes to people as it is just the ethos, as it is the overall brand. And you look at a band like Simple Plan, who you brought up. We had Chuck on the show, 100 episodes ago. And I mean, the dude is fantastic. He's great.
Yeah,
he's an awesome drummer. And Simple Plan is one of those bands that, you know, we kind of brought up, like, you know, I think you said before, like, you know, like corny pop punk a little bit.
Yeah.
To a degree, that's kind of what Simple Plan did. But they were pioneers in so much that, like, if it wasn't for your Good Charlottes and your Simple Plans, you know, would there have been an avenue for your Paramours and your Fallout Boys and your My Chems?
Yeah.
You know, probably not. So, but the thing that Simple Plan was able to do was they were able to keep themselves afloat in an industry where they could have just went out to sea and people would have been like, you remember that band Simple Plan? They, you know, they had that band, you know, no pads, no helmets, just balls, and that was great. And, you know, what the hell have they been up to? They were able to stay relevant, and they were able to kind of mold with the times. But what they were also able to do is they were able to get smart about how to hitch their wagon. You know, so they were like, hey, you know, we have our finger on the pulse. You know, we know that pop punk is dominated by bands like the Wonder Years and the Story So Far and, you know, to a degree, you know, your State Champs and your Real Friends. They knew that. So they were like, you know what? We're not going to write a record in that style. We're going to write our own record, but we're going to make sure that people, when they think of the Wonder Years, when they think of these bands, they realize that, you know, Simple Plan kind of gave them the opportunity to be the bands that they are. And for that reverence, that means something, right? So I think there's a lot to be said about that, about bands that have that longevity, but they also are still to this day showing smaller bands and newer bands how to have a presence in this day and age when 25 years ago, they were able to have a presence in that old style. So they've got that longevity. That's really important. And, you know, it's cool to know that younger bands such as yourselves are kind of taking that ideology and running with it. So I think that's a super cool thing. So to that end, you know, kind of talking about, you know, we sort of discussed like what's on the horizon for you guys, as far as getting out there and playing some shows. Do you guys have any touring plans yet, or like what's on the radar there for you guys?
So just to give you context, yeah. Montreal's mask mandate was pulled 2 days ago.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Okay. So that's a bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like we're lining up our first show in July. It's not awesome. Announced yet, so we'll keep that to ourselves for now in case those plans change. But right now, really, the focus is those recordings, and I think from there, the shows will come. I mean, obviously, we're discussing here and there like little runs in Ontario, like that's. In Canada, like that's the fucking hotbed of pop punk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Seaway, like sure. Pacific.
Yep.
I'm sure Bearings. I'm missing Bearings.
We Were Sharks.
We were sharks. Oh, yeah. Fucking sick band. So many good bands and so many good producers. I don't know mm-hmm. how many people are, you know, music nerds like us, but like when we started looking at this new, at this band, and we're like, okay, we got to work with good producers. Like that's how you get the good sound and you move forward in the industry. Mm-hmm. We just looked 6 hours away in Toronto and we saw that some powerhouses were making crazy records down there. You know, our first, well, I'm not going to call it an EP because we're dropping in singles, but like our first four tracks were mixed by Sam Guiana, who's fucking sick. He worked and produced like the Between You and Me, the latest Between You and Me record. That's just like,
you know, Silverstein also. They just released.
They just released the new Silverstein. Like massive, amazing, like great rock records coming from right there. And then our next four tracks we're going to do with Anton DeLost, who, speaking of State Champs, which we have like a million times, like he just mixed the entire State Champs record. He co-wrote some of the tracks and did some additional production on that. So it's like having somebody who's working on like literally one of our favorite bands and one of our influences, you know, available to us so closely is just crazy. So like Ontario is definitely where we need to hit up. And then the States are obviously in the cards, but then like that's a whole, like you said, logistical nightmare. You know, small like anecdote on that. It's not my band, but it's a band that of some of my friends. They wanted to play. They got booked for the fest in Gainesville.
Sure, of course.
And they didn't go through the whole paperwork shit. Mm-hmm. So they drove down very innocently and very cutely. And just said, we're going to go play a show. We're making $0. Like, thank you, America. And they're like, get the fuck out of our country. And they were all put on like no fly restrictions.
It's crazy.
And literally they got booked on Fest the subsequent year because they didn't make it to the first year. And they had to do this like cockamamie thing where like two of them went by plane, two of them went by train, two other ones went by like car, but were driven by an American citizen to make sure that like they didn't get flagged. It was nuts. Yeah. And like they were lent gear and in the States by like the bands that they knew they were already there. It was it's fucked up, man.
It is.
Like, you know, I'm gonna lose money in your country, probably.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Like, and you're pretty much harassing me. Like, what's the story?
Yeah, it's a big time bummer. It really is, because you know, at the end of the day, it's just like, why make it so difficult for, you know, like young kids or young adults to just like have an experience. It's like, you know, for some reason, America and the policies that are here, they just think that like everybody is trying to come in and like suck the teat of like American, you know, incredible, you know, breast milk nonsense. It's just like, bro, this is so stupid. It's so stupid because like, realistically, you know, our country, for what it's worth, you know, being in America, I mean, it's just like there are things about it that are just completely ass backwards. And one of those things is just, you know, the issue of visas and labor and all of this stuff about thinking that, you know, people are trying to come into the country to evade taxes or whatever. It's just like, they should make it easier, you know, just be like, oh, you're in a band. Cool. You know, this is the paperwork you got to fill out. It doesn't have to be so much money. You don't have to get flagged by border patrols and shit. It's just, it's wild.
It's crazy. Like, honestly, yeah. Canada ain't that bad. Like,
yeah. Right. I mean, like, Jesus.
It's really not that bad.
It's just,
we're not fleeing Canada to, you know, to go live the American dream. Like, we're doing okay here.
It's crazy, man. And it's a bummer, but you know, when that time comes for you guys, I wish you all the best, and I hope that you don't have any issues getting over here. Real quick, just take a small break, and then we'll kind of jump into a little bit more talk about Sucker Punch and of course talk a little bit of hockey. But just want to mention our sponsor, DraftKings, who you know, have been working with us for quite some time. And of course, they are in full swing, giving you great opportunities with DraftKings Sportsbook in pursuit of the Stanley Cup. So they're an official sports betting partner of the NHL, and they've got this great offer for the most exciting playoffs in sports. So new customers can bet just $5 on any team and get $100 in free bets to win. No matter what, win or lose, you can't beat that. So if you're looking to turn a small bet into a big payday, you can do so with same game parlays, which is totally awesome. You can create your own parlay, combining multiple bets on a bunch of different things. How many goals will be scored? How many shots are taken? You know, how many saves? You know, a bunch of different things. It really, really is cool. You get an even bigger payout. And of course, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, which they always are. So you can deposit and withdraw that cash whenever you want. So there are no minimums. Totally awesome. So as always, want you to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. That's for the Hockey Podcast Network. You get $5 on any NHL team to win. You get $100 in free bets no matter what. So again, that's code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, and they're an official sports betting partner of the NHL. And again, bet $5 on any team. You think the Cats are gonna, you know, pull it out of the Bolt series? Boom, go for it. You know, are the Avs gonna come out of the West? Boom, go for it. $5 is all you got to put down, and $100 in free bets. So you can't beat that. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. That's a tough word to say. You can see the show notes for details. As always, bet responsibly. And that, my friends, is DraftKings Sportsbook, which is cool. So I don't know. You know, I am really super pumped for, you know, the playoffs and the semifinal matchups that are coming up. So let's just kind of dive right into that, talk a little bit about that. So, you know, we have just a ton of really, really cool things coming out of the playoffs right now. Lots of game sevens, really close, really tight knit, really physical series. And what we've got left in the East is, you know, we've got the Rangers taking on the Canes, and you got the Cats taking on the Bolts. And on the other side, you've got the Avs, and they're taking on
St. Louis
Blues. Yeah, I forgot who came out of that series. Then you've got the Oilers and the Flames. Like I was saying earlier in the episode, that Oilers Flames series, I'm really looking forward to. As I'm looking forward to the Caps Bold series. But, you know, I personally, you know, I didn't think some of these series were going to go as deep as they did. I was really surprised that the Pens went up 3-1 on the Rangers. That I just couldn't believe. I really thought that that was going to be a series the Rangers were going to take in five. So I guess let's talk a little bit about that, because the Penguins are notoriously the darlings of the NHL. I think anyone who's not a Penguins fan could probably agree with that. And a lot of, you know, of hockey Twitter and, you know, realistically hockey journalists are saying that this is the end of that era. Yeah, you know, you're talking about, you know, guys like Malkin and Gensel and Sid, and all these guys are you know, kind of have their contracts coming up and all this kind of stuff. And I had read something somewhere. I don't know how realistic it is, but I had read something that the Pens were going to offer Malkin 3 years at $5 million a year. Oh, wow. Something like that. Now, I don't know if that's true. You know, that could just be, you know, hockey Twitter going crazy. But, I mean, let's talk kind of fantasy here. So, you know, let's just say the Pens lowball Malkin. And he's like, you know what? Thanks for the years. Let me see where I could go. Realistically, where does he land?
Who's got the cap space? That's the problem, man. This black cap is crazy. Like, is Malkin gonna go and make his $10 million a year and play in Arizona in front of 5,000 people?
Yeah, exactly, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Oh, so then, sure. You know, what team? I'm trying to think what team has even the cap. I mean, it.
The Habs probably the Knights will offer something.
Well, they don't have a cap. Oh my god!
No, I was just kidding about the.
They're gonna find a way. They're gonna.
That's a Knights move for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that would be something else, though. I mean, you know, if he landed on the Habs, I mean, you know, for the Habs, I mean, it's kind of you know, I guess when you look at it, I mean, you guys do have a lot of younger talent, but I mean. On the older end of it, I mean, it's kind of a little lean. I mean, you've got Shea Weber, right? Who's 35, 36 at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and but as far as, you know, what you guys have going on in terms of, you know, some of the guys that have really been, you know, kind of pulling their weight, you know, you've got, you know, a guy like Nick Suzuki, you know, you've got, you know, obviously, you know, Cole Caulfield, who's everyone's been talking about. Yeah, there it is, my friend. Yeah. So, you know, I could see them, you know, the Habs making a splash, you know, I mean, it's a tough go, man. They, you know, they get to the Cup Finals, you know, this year, they really, unfortunately, don't show up to play. You know, a rebound season is something that I think they could be looking at, and maybe it's something that they could, they could build upon. But I mean, you know, to get a guy like Malkin, I mean, that means, you know, you've got to give him at least, even if maybe he can't get 10, he's got to get at least 9. And, you know, I mean, even if he's what, 33 or 34 or something like that, he's going to want probably 4 or 5 years. And I mean, do you really want to give a 39-year-old that much money to play hockey? I mean, like, you know, unless you have, you know, the only person I'd probably give that much money to play hockey to be that old would probably be like Jaromir Jagr, who, like, if he decided to come back to the NHL and was like, I'll play for the Islanders for 4 years for $8 million. I'd be like, give this man the money. He's a hockey robot. But, like, other than that,
you just want to see the Jagrs in your stadium. That's what you want.
That's what I want, man. I mean, listen, the man's worn damn near every sweater. Except an Islander sweater, so that is something I would kill to see. I really would. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that Penguins team if they just decide to completely dismantle it and rebuild and build around some young talent. But it definitely is the end of an era, and they talked about it as the season was progressing. They were saying, "Hey, listen, you know, the Pens are going to make a run. This is going to be the, you know, potentially the last one that they do." But you've even got that going on with, you know, with a team like the Caps too. They're aging. They're getting old. You know, again, Ovi is another hockey robot. You know, I don't care what you say. But, you know, the man will probably play until he's 75 years old. And that's fine with me because he's fun to watch. But, you know, some of that team is, you know, they're getting up there in years, you know, and guys like Backstrom and even TJ, you know, I mean, like he's just starting to climb up there. So, I guess to talk a bit about the Habs, you know, just to kind of understand your perspective on them and what you think they need to put together, you know, during this offseason to be contenders, you know, realistically, does a guy like Malkin fit? Or, you know, who else is out there that you guys think could be those perennial players to get you back to the dance?
I don't think getting back to the dance right now is for next year. I think you got to look at Connor Bedard. You got to look at whoever they're going to draft this year, whether it's Shane Wright or whatever.
Yeah, we do have a very big draft coming.
Very big draft.
So we do have a lot of picks.
It could be defining the next decade for the Habs, this draft and next draft also, depending where it goes. But you know, flat cap, what happens with Carey Price right now? Is he on the cap or is he LTIR? Who knows? Mm-hmm. I think the fan base is embracing the retool or the reset or whatever you want to call it, and looking forward. What I could see us doing is getting some of that veteran presence. You talked about the Pens, Letang.
Oh yeah,
could be a great pickup. You know, we got the cap space. He can teach our young up and coming defensemen what it is to be an NHL player and being a pro, and what it is to win. A guy like Boston, a guy like Bergeron, if he wants to do a last lap, you know, in his hometown, that could be something interesting for the guys like Suzuki. If we end up drafting Shane Wright, you know, those are kind of like the models. Bergeron is the model for those types of players.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like those kinds of moves, even though they could appear to be done to be competitive right now, I think they would still be done to be competitive in the future, because they would be instilling that attitude and that attitude into the team. I don't think getting a Malkin would make sense for this team right now. I think they're going to, you know, flip out some contracts, maybe a Jeff Petrie. You know, maybe a Gallagher if a team is interested, but you know, at that cap and where he's at right now, maybe less. Mm-hmm. And go from there, you know, build from the last half of the season and what St. Louis brought to the team, and just build off of that and build off of, you know, the budding stars that we have, the Suzukis and the Caulfields and even Romanoff to a certain extent. You know, playing big minutes and being that presence, you know. I think there's a lot of like good things coming up. How is this team going to be built? Is it going to be built through UFAs, through trades, through draft? I think it's going to be a combination of all those things, and that's maybe what the Bergevin era was kind of lacking and kind of brought us to a wall. Last year was he built a team that was only competitive for 1 year. And that's a bit on him. He put all his eggs in certain baskets and that didn't pan out for him. But I mean, last year was a crazy run. So would I trade that for a more competitive team, for, you know, years in the future? I don't know. You know, it's that run is just so special. I don't know if I would trade it, but you know, it's time to move on, and it's exciting to see where this team's going.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And then so the other kind of interesting question, you know, talking about Carey Price just earlier, again, you know, like, so hearkening back to what we spoke about earlier in the episode, you know, you've got a team like the Canadians who have been around, like I said, for over 100 years, right? And I mean, when you look at the, you know, the people that are in the rafters, right? I mean, you know, Richard, you know, you've got, God, I mean, like, all, you know, Fleur, yeah, I was gonna say, you know, Jacques Plante, and like all these guys who have been, who have been like actual, like, you know, Hall of Fame worthy people, right? Like people that change the
straight legends
that change hockey, right? So, you know, it's been, I think the last one to go up there was Wah, you know, deservedly. So you look at a guy like Carey Price, right? So, I mean, like, you know, he's had a 15-year tenure on the team, right? I think like 07 was his first year, right? Now, granted, you know, championships and cups to raise, none, unfortunately. But, you know, that's kind of the way it goes sometimes. But, you know, as far as being someone who has been, you know, the kind of pillar, you know, to which the team has revolved around, just in terms of being a presence in the locker room, do you think a guy like him gets to share, you know, a banner with those guys, or you know, do you think he just goes down as you know, a tried and true Canadian? You know, does he get up there? Does he deserve to be up there? I guess that's the real question.
It's tough to say right now with his current situation.
Yeah,
his knee's pretty fucked up, so he came back at the end of the year, and you could see that he wasn't at his fully.
The thing is, Montreal is a fucking city where it's, you didn't bring the cup, get out of town.
Yeah.
That's where it is, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, Saku Koivu was like an idol for X number of years. He bled Bleu Blanc Rouge, and he was a great player. Would he have been, you know, up in the rafters if he was drafted by another team? There's a chance. So it's tough names to compare yourself to.
Sure.
And you said it yourself, the last one was Patrick Roy.
Yeah.
And Patrick Roy is, you know, one of the best goalies of all time.
Yeah.
He has all those cup rings stuck in his ears. So, so I mean, I don't know. I think you can't, man. Like, I think it's going to be the next person that carries this team on their shoulders and brings them to that cup. That's going to go up. I think that's the way the city sees it. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's how management sees it.
Yeah. I think that's probably the fairest assessment that I could think of. I mean, you know, it's just, it's just one of those things where every franchise, you know, kind of views things a little different. And I think that, you know, like looking at, the Islanders, you know, for instance, just because I have such a close history with them. It's like, you know, when you look at the guys in the rafters, like, you know, a lot of them would probably be in the rafters in a lot of other places. Mm. You know, you got your guys like, you know, Bossy and Trottier and Nystrom and all those guys. But I mean, like, you look at some other franchises and like the people who have gone up in the rafters, and it's like, you know, do they hold a candle to, like I said, the people that are up there at Bell Center, or the people that are up there in Toronto, or the, you know, the guys that are up there even, you know, in Chicago or Detroit. It's like, it's such a dichotomy there, because every franchise is different. And, you know, you kind of do feel bad for some of those like mid-market teams who, you know, like, I don't know, you know, like who's up there for the Bolts, but I think it's probably Le Cavalier and you know, maybe a couple
Brad Richards.
Yeah, it could be Brad Richards. And like, you got to think that, like, you know, 5-10 years from now, I bet Stamkos goes up there, you know,
100% for sure.
You know, and it's just like, but, you know, obviously he's won a cup, which is great. But like, if Stamkos was, you know, on the Habs, you know, and didn't win, like, is he going up there? You know, so, you know,
if he doesn't win. And
like, you're essentially like, you're putting your number up there next to fucking Rocket Richard. You know, it's just like, holy shit, you know, that's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing.
Well, I would say that's probably why it's hard to attract some talent sometimes in Montreal. I mean, the taxes don't help, and the weather could be better, but, you know, there's a lot of pressure, and like, especially for French Canadian born players. You know, when's the last time we had a French Canadian superstar? Like a very long time ago. We've had, you know, the Danny Briere's of this world that come back for one last lap and just do it for the thrill of it. But you know, so many times you hear about those, like those big Quebec players, the Simon Gagnés, the Daniel Briere's, when they're in their prime, and what are they doing? They're using the Habs as leverage to get a bigger contract with the team that is going to be, you know, less stressed to play for them. And it's fair. Yep. I get it. You know, you don't want to play in the shadows of Jean Béliveau and the Rocket and Patrick Roy and all of that.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to be an NHL player and strive to go get that cup. Like, that additional pressure must not be fun, you know?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And while we were chatting, I popped on to Cap Friendly the hot second, just because I really didn't realize the enormity of picks that you have. But I mean, like, it's wild. You guys have 10 picks over the first four rounds.
Yeah.
That's like, that's incredible. So, I mean, you guys are really going to be able to pick up some, you know, some great young talent in a draft class that, you know, a lot of people have said has some pretty good depth this year. You know, I feel like, and maybe it's just me not keeping a close eye on, you know, the superstars in the draft class. But I mean, like, you know, I feel like, you know, maybe this year doesn't have your, you know, your Johnny Hockey, like your Johnny Hockeys or your Lafreniers or like, you know, all these guys, but like still there's some depth there. And with 10 picks over four, you know, four rounds, not only do you guys have the opportunity to grab some depth, you also have the opportunity to kind of mess around with those picks and see what you can do on draft day to potentially trade up, to potentially, you know, make some deals, to even, you know, shed some, you know, dead weight and a pick or two, you know, to get some real talent on the roster. So I think that's a great thing. That's something to look forward to. I mean, like, I can't remember a year as an Islander fan where, like, I think maybe the most I can remember is one year they had probably seven in four, but 10 in four, man, that's awesome.
Crazy. Yeah,
it really is.
It's a lot.
That's really interesting too, is that, you know, the teams that usually are in that position have a terrible roster. They're depraved of any talent, and they're just playing an AHL team and waiting for the talent to come in. But there is already a basis to work off of.
Yeah.
So it's injecting more talent in that roster with a basis that's already there and that's already young, and you know, it's a fun nucleus to put your hopes in is really interesting and really fun. And the draft is in Montreal this year too. So can you imagine the Bell Center filled to the brim while the Canadians are drafting first overall?
Yeah.
And then drafting 10 times, like you said, in the first four rounds. It's going to be nuts.
It's a make or break, man. It really is. I think it is. You know, and, so I guess just looking at the playoffs, I'll get predictions. So I'll start with you up there, John. What are we thinking? Who's coming out of the West? Who's coming out of the East? And who's raising the cup this year?
Man, I was talking to Terry yesterday. I think over the on Eastern is going to be the Rangers. I know it's a long guns. But I don't know. I don't know. I feel like they're this year's underdog. And on the West, I believe the Avs, they got to win. They got to win this year.
Mm-hmm. And you think the Avs are going to win between the Rangers and the – what do you think, Joe?
Let's go Rangers, man.
Rangers.
Yeah, let's go Rangers.
Ballsy, I love it.
Love that. And what do you think, Terry?
Balls, man. So I'm going to be very boring and I'm going to go with like everybody's picks. Florida, man, what's this team's weakness? Like it's really hard to see. And like, I mean, I know that they're playing like the, you know, two-time Stanley Cup champions in the next round, but that team is a bit, you know, tired from their two runs. The Panthers are just trending up. I'm a big believer of like teams need to lose in the playoffs and learn from those losses and then, you know, step up and move up and grow from there. And I just see the Avs and the Panthers being two teams that have been competitive for a few years now, Yep. I've been building their core. I've been like shaping their roster and just being ready to take that next step. And so those out of the West, I'm taking the Avs and I'm taking the Panthers out of the East. And I have to go with the Avs, man. Like, it's this year has been very offensive, which is kind of strange. You know, you usually defense wins championships, but I think this year offense is going to win championships. So even if like their goalie is maybe not like their strongest asset, like having a guy like Makar and just having the insane firepower that they have in front, I think they're going to put it together. And like, I remember last year watching the interview with McKinnon on how it was unacceptable to lose. And he doesn't want to be one of those guys who is a star in the league and just doesn't touch the cup. I think he's on a mission, man. I think McKinnon's going to bring it home.
Yeah. I've got my, like my realistic idea of what's going to happen. And again, I think it's going to be a rehashing of 96. I think you're going to see Colorado and Florida. I don't think the Avs are going to sweep. I think it's going to be a very competitive series, but I do think the Avs just really have that firepower, led by, a guy like McKinnon, who's just a bona fide superstar. And that's not to say anything against a guy like Huberdeau, who, I mean, like 95 or something assists. I mean, like
insane,
unbelievable. Insane. You haven't seen that kind of production since like, those 90s years where, guys were racking up 200 points. I mean, it's just, it blows my mind. That's realistically what I think you're going to see. And I think maybe the Avs will take it six. But what I would love to see personally is I would love to see the Oilers play the Rangers. That would be just a wild series, watching a guy like and I mean, like, for me personally, unless it's the Islanders, right, because I'm such an Islander fan, I always look at hockey in like, so when we look at the Stanley Cup Finals, what two teams are really going to sell tickets? Like, who's going to put butts in seats? Mm-hmm. Like, that's like the pro wrestling mentality in my head. In seats, right? So, I mean, you put, a scrappy team like the Rangers, right, with Panarin and, Lafreniere, Capo and like all these guys against McDavid and Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins. And I mean, like, holy crap. Like, that alone could, like, could pull people from whatever the hell they're doing and actually make them watch hockey. And that's not to say that Colorado and Florida couldn't do that, because they have enough star power themselves. But I mean, like, looking at, all of the times, and, I hate to say it because it's a homer thing to say, but when you look at the Stanley Cup Finals where Sid was a part of it, or Patrick Kane was a part of it, or Ovi was a part of it, it just, like, the light shone brighter. And that's what I want for hockey, at least in America, is I want the lights to shine bright on it.
That because makes a lot of sense.
Because the more people that watch it, just the more opportunities it's going to get. And like the fact that ESPN and TNT and TBS, at least in the States, signed on to get hockey onto networks better than, fucking the MSG Plus and like, NESN and like all this stuff where it's just like barely in market, I think is a fantastic thing. And the fact that, ESPN shelled out money to get a guy like Gretzky, to be a part of their team, it shows that they mean a little bit of business and they're ready to bring hockey back. Because I remember, 17 or 18 years old when the lockout happened. And I remember the NHL was just like, never again, like never again. I will literally show like jet skiing swirls before we show 30 seconds of hockey. And I remember like even like Linda Cohn and John Butchergrass, like if you're familiar, which I'm sure you guys are, they were like dying, salivating for any type of hockey coverage that they can get. And I remember like, maybe 07, 08 or 08, 09 or something like that, when like, ESPN was still barely covering hockey, like Linda Cohn got to talk with Barry Melrose about hockey for like 3 minutes. And like, you could just see like the woman's face was just like buzzing. And then they like dove right into like, okay, guys, like LeBron has white shoelaces today. Let's talk about that. And it's just like, and no shade to the NBA. I think the NBA is awesome. But what I love about hockey is that I get the opportunity to see, let's just say, Colorado versus Florida this year, right? And last year, you got the opportunity to see the Bolts play, you know, the Habs and the Bolts and the Stars, right? So you get to see all these different teams, but the NBA, the NFL, they just have these like perennial powerhouse teams. And to me, that's not like what I watch sports for. I watch it for the intrigue, and I watch it for the fact that an underdog team like the Rangers could just like smoke everybody. And granted, as an Islander fan, like, will I hear it for the rest of my goddamn life? Of course I will. But at the same time, like, why not? You know, why not give me a Rangers Oilers Cup and just have all these young bucks just like annihilate it? You know,
by the hell? I mean, seeing Connor McDavid play for the Stanley Cup, that would just be crazy. Like that. Right. And then, you know, Dreisaitl as the second fiddle to that, like, yeah. Forget about
Mike Smith, man. Does he have a cup?
Mike Smith, is he?
He doesn't have any cup, right?
No.
Yeah, it's probably his last season. He's like,
that's a hockey fan story. That's like, fucking old grizzled guy who just like pulled this together. That's so hockey. That's so hockey.
And you know what else is so unfortunately hockey too? Like, imagine the Rangers get to the Cup Finals and they win a cup, right?
Yeah.
And like they literally win a cup a year or two after poor Lundqvist stood on his head year after year and never got to raise that cup. And I'll never forget watching that series with the Kings, and my buddy who had been a lifelong Ranger fan, just like, what was it, that 2-0 goal that finished off the series. I just remember him like dropping to his knees and like laying in front of the TV silent for like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. My poor buddy Jimmy. I'll never forget it. And it's just like, imagine that. Like, imagine the poetic injustice. And again, let me not take anything away from Shesterkin. The man is
crazy.
Probably going to be on the level, if not eclipsing, a guy like Lundqvist as he goes through his career. But it's just like, imagine that. Like, imagine the story that is, that, you know, poor Lundqvist couldn't get his cup, but you know, here we have, you know, Shesterkin, you know, potentially getting a cup. It's just, there's so much intrigue that's involved in it. And that's why I love hockey. So I think that's as great of a moment as any to ask you guys one final question, and then we'll close it for the night. And I want to jump back into a quick music question. So, you know, Sucker Punch is, you know, the wheels are turning. You know, you guys are going to go and record some new stuff. You've got, you know, a comeback show, hopefully some things, you know, going on in the future. But, you know, obviously Sucker Punch wouldn't exist if it wasn't for, you know, certain bands that put you in the mindset to realize like, hey, this is something that I could do for the rest of my life. Right. So I'll ask you to put you on the spot. One band each, if you can. The most influential alternative band that made you decide that this is what you want to do. And whoever wants to do it first,
oh my God,
lay it on me. I know it's a tough one, but gotta put people on the spot. That's what this podcast is all about.
Do you want to go first, Joe?
Yeah, I'll go with we spoke about it earlier. The pop punk MGK album, Tickets to My Downfall. That was my
That's your number one. I don't like that.
Well, I mean, the question was, what kind of make me want to do this again?
I wouldn't say it's your number one influence, right?
Oh, so you know what? You're right, though. You answered the question the way that I posed it, and I probably should have posed it the way you're saying, which is, you know, as far as you being a musician in general, what is the most influential band that like made you decide that music was the thing for you?
Oh man, probably Blink.
Ah, yep.
Yeah.
Hell yeah!
I knew you were gonna say Blink, so then I had to think of a second one. Blink is just so good because it's like Blink showed up in our lives when we were like, what's cool? Like, what do I want to be? And then you see these fucking three assholes making jokes on stage, singing fart about butts and just being ridiculous guys and making great music, great catchy music, mm-hmm. and going with it. And as an older person, seeing how that kind of stood the test of time, and that's always a little facet of my personality.
Yeah,
I think that still plays. And like, you know, regardless of the deemed quality of their new stuff, regardless of what they drop, I'm going to check it out and see, mm-hmm. see what it's like and root for it to be amazing and want to do it. And like, even in all the modern stuff, like having that Travis Barker influence in it does play a role in my intrigue and wanting to see what the fuss is all about and checking it out. So I think Blink has to be it.
Yeah.
Like if you're in our age range, it's Blink absolutely. All the way, man.
And I think that's a perfectly reasonable response for you both to have. You know, you definitely don't have to try to find somebody else. I guess I just got to ask Joe, do you remember how old you were when you first tried to play the bass line to Carousel? Cause I know you tried and I know you probably, I know today you can probably do it without problem, but I know you were probably a youngin at some point. You were like, I could play this, and you were probably like, fuck, I can't.
Funny story though, I grew up being a drummer.
Oh shit, okay.
So I was all about being
Travis Barker. See, everybody hates it when I say it, and I'm just going to say it, and nothing against Travis. I love Travis. I think that the spin that maybe not Enema for me personally, but I think Travis really showed that he belonged in Blink-182 with the self-titled record. I think that was his magnum opus. Whereas I think Enema was just, I think it was just like a little overplayed. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've always thought about Travis and personally, but maybe it is like the roots of the kind of punk rock that I like. I was a Scott guy. I was always a Scott guy, man. I thought Dude Ranch like was just like was tight and tasteful. And like, don't get me wrong. Like, I've been a drummer since I'm 7. Have I, you know, tried to perfect playing Adam's song in every single way possible? Of course. Is playing Don't Leave Me and Dump Weed as fast as they played it on Mark, Tom, and Travis show probably one of the most fun things to do? Yeah. Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times like I just literally sat there with my bass drum foot just being like, don't leave me all alone. How the fuck is he doing this? And it's just like, and there's just such beauty to it. But something about like Josie and A New Hope and Emo and like those songs on Dude Ranch, man, just like, I can't get over them. And again, you know, Travis is fantastic. All of the spin that he's put on, all of the great records he's played on, you know, between Blink, Boxcar Racer, and the band he was in with the dudes from Rancid that I can't think of the name of.
Fucking Transplants.
That's the one. Yep. And then, you know, even like the work he did with, you know, like MGK and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, God bless him, man. But as far as like musicianship is concerned, like they led the way. They really did. And, you know, say what you want about Tom, you know, Tom DeLonge as he got a little bit older and weirder, you know, he just got weird. But I also enjoyed, you know, Skiba Blink. And I still do. I think California is a dope record. Never got into Nine, but California was a dope record. And I mean, I've been a Trio fan as long as I can remember. So getting to hear Matt sing harmonies with Mark, that's just like the coolest thing to me. That's the coolest thing. So Blink being the band that you guys have hung your hat on, hell yeah. I think that's perfect. Why not? Favorite Blink song of all time?
Tricky question.
That's such a tricky. I'm gonna say First Date.
Love it. Great.
For like I spin our local emo night, and that's just the fucking jam, man. That's like it's the perfect jam. It's not like the song you expect to be like the song that you're gonna hear, but it's the song that like everybody still fucking knows. So it's like, it's kind of like, it's not the A track, like it's not the rock show. It's not What's My Age Again. It's not all the small things. It's just like under that drum fill at the beginning, that bridge with the fucking drum hi-hat, the chorus, like that silly fucking 70s video.
Oh, like, so good. So
there's,
good.
There's nothing I don't like about that song, and
that.
All the memories associated to that song, like it's to me it's the perfect Blink song.
Hell yeah! What about you, Joe?
To me, it's probably Josie.
See, dude, that is my favorite Blink 182 song, hands down. Josie, I think almost I've been in probably four or five bands in my life. I think every band I've been in with the exception of like the post-hardcore band I was in, because it wouldn't make much sense. Although, one time at a show, our singer, without telling anybody, got super drunk and just sang the opening to Roller Coaster before we started a song for no reason. He just yelled it into the fuck is going on here. It was great, though. I loved it. But every band that I've been in has played Josie. I think it's one of those fun songs to play. I started a Josie sing-along when I was really drunk on a boat in Tampa Bay, like 6 months ago. Like truthfully great and great video too. Alyssa Milano. I mean, like,
yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Come on. Incredible band. But I really hope that Blink is one of those bands who they never quite give it up. I was, to be honest, you know, when Mark went through his cancer scare, which, you know,
thank heavens
he's in remission now. I really thought that was going to be it. But what I also thought was when Mark went through this scare, I thought that if it was going to be it, I thought that this was going to be at least the time where Mark and Tom just kind of put it all aside and say, let's just do it one more time for the kids, you know? And that could still happen. And I really do feel like it's on the horizon.
I'm saying it. I'm calling it 2023 Blinkway Tour. With Skiba and Tom DeLonge.
That would be fucking gnarly.
How sick would that be?
Give me that. Give me that. I'll. The only thing I won't do is touch the cup about it. But give me it. I'll do it for sure. Boys, thank you so much for doing this, man. This was such a blast. Again, we've got Sucker Punch. We got Joe and Terry here with us. Real quick before we shoot out. Go ahead and just drop us your socials where everyone that's listening can find you guys, you know, on all your different platforms there.
Joe.
We do have Instagram, which is Sucker Punch MTL. We do have Facebook. You can find us. We do spell Sucker Punch all in caps with a dot at the end.
Okay.
How'd you say it? What's a...
With an exclamation mark.
Surely.
Here we go. Where you can find us on TikTok, awesome. YouTube.
You can find me being an asshole on TikTok.
Love that. Awesome.
Yeah, Spotify is the number one, man. We want those streams.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Get on there.
Those labels to see those streams and give us a what's up.
Hell yeah. Get on there. Make sure you're streaming the tunes. Keep your eyes out for new ones. And you know the drill with Spotify and Apple Music. As soon as they announce something that's coming out, make sure you pre-save that bad boy. Yeah. That helps bands so much. You don't realize it. Go and go support those playlists. Just go listen to them, because the more you listen to playlists, the more people are going to put music on them, the more of them that are going to come out. They're important. They're big for the scene. And we appreciate them. We appreciate you guys being on them. And we appreciate you guys being here, talking a little bit of hockey with us. Hopefully next season, you know, will be a little bit brighter and better for the Habs. And hopefully we can have you guys back on after you guys have had your 900 draft picks. You could be like, and you can tell me about each and every one of them. I would love to hear that. But for Bar Down Breakdown, for me, Tom, Mikey being absent, but I know he would have loved to have been here. But we will definitely get you guys on again sometime soon. We appreciate you guys so much for being on here with us. You guys have a great rest of your night. We'll catch you on the other side, all right?
Sick.
Take care, everybody. Enjoy the playoffs.
I'll do my best, man. Be well.